Steve Jones Jr. from the Dunker Spot joins me to discuss how the 76ers are going to deal with 4+ weeks of Joel Embiid on the shelf, fun Kevin Garnett stories, and we try to figure out which teams might need one more piece before Thursday's trade deadline. All that and more is coming up on this episode of Divine Intervention. Saul makes 10. 10 ought to do it, don't you think? You think we need one more? You think we need one more? All right, we'll get one more. John Gennaro, count me in!
One, two, three.
Today's first words belong to Danny Ocean from the 2001 documentary Ocean's 11, but the rest of them belong to me. Welcome to Divine Intervention, a self-help podcast about basketball. My name is Dan Devine, and before we get rolling, here are three things that I am grateful for today. Number one, I get paid by Yahoo Sports to write about the NBA and talk about it into this microphone and into that camera. Pretty good deal. Number two, the silver linings to my own incompetence. Normally, when we've got a morning recording, I like to get up at like 4:30 or 5 in the morning so I can do my show prep before I got to get the kids to school. I started doing that today, and then I remembered we pushed the recording back a couple hours, so I was able to get an extra couple hours of sleep. And as a result, I am in theory slightly less of a monster and more ready to get going for you people today. And number three, as important as all that, I get to spend part of my morning talking with someone whose analysis and whose approach to the game I find to be delightful. My guest today is someone who actually knows what he's talking about, which is a vast difference from the person that's usually on this microphone talking to you people in this pile of bricks. He played college ball at Arizona State and UNLV. He grinded tape in the grindhouse with the Memphis Grizzlies. He served as an assistant coach for the Brooklyn Nets. And now he is gracious enough to share what he's learned during his life in the game with you and me. Indispensable game tape breakdowns on Twitter and in audio form on the excellent podcast, The Dunker Spot, with co-host Nikias Duncan, which you can find wherever you're listening to this, and you can even watch it on JJ Redick's YouTube page. Friends, a warm welcome for Steve Jones Jr. Steve, thank you so much for making time for us today. How are you doing this morning?
Oh, I'm actually doing great. That was probably one of the best intros I've ever received.
Yes. That's what we go for here.
So we're going to go ahead and file that, save that forever, and just use that. It's gonna anytime. Hey, what's your bio? No, just read this. Just do what Dan did. I need that same energy. So my cup is full now. So let me see if I can pour it out.
That's what I'm trying to do. I know that you frequently like to remind your listeners to embrace their bounce, and that's what I'm trying to do here. I'm trying to bring that same energy up top at the start of this show.
Yeah, I like it. I like it. See, now I can't hit those notes. The intros are very funny, by the way. Like, I don't even know when I started, and I just keep adding to it, and I keep doing it. I don't know. But it's fun. Like, I hope people enjoy it. I don't know, man.
Well, first off, they definitely do. And secondly, I think that's when it becomes really special, is when you're like, I'm doing a bit. But then eventually, you do the bit so much that you become the bit, and you're like, I actually really do want people to be out there embracing their bounce. I want them to be feeling that excitement, whether they're listening to me or just going about their day. So I'm grateful for you to encompass that bit, for it to become part of you. You onboarded it, and now you're sharing it with the rest of us.
I also can't help but every time someone asks me how am I doing, I usually say feeling good, immediately followed by feeling great. And then right. I say happy to be here, and I'm like, oh no, I'm doing the thing. I should probably stop.
Never stop. Never apologize for being great. Steve, I am so grateful for you to be here today. And I've asked you here today because we're only a couple of days away from the 2024 NBA trade deadline. And while it's possible we've already seen the biggest moves that are going to take place, OG Anunoby to New York, Pascal Siakam to Indiana, Terry Rozier to Miami, there's still plenty of teams that are looking to get something done between now and Thursday at 3 p.m. So I want to take a look at some of those teams that, like our man George Clooney set up at the top, might need one more. And you are someone who knows these teams at like a molecular level at this point. You are following everybody. You got the all of the multiverse is sort of out in front of you. And I know that you keep an eye on everything. So I wanted to be able to break it down with you in that way. And we will get into that. But first, here at Divine Intervention, we always try to operate from a place of joy. So, Steve Jones Jr., what is something that is bringing you joy in the world of basketball this week?
Anytime that James Harden in particular does something that gets Kawhi Leonard to celebrate and or emote is my new favorite thing. And when you watch Clippers games, I just want you to see the moment. Because usually it comes after a James Harden possession where he may or may not have lulled the defense to sleep or hit a step back or got an and one, which might draw groans from a certain crowd of people. And then you just see Kawhi. Yeah. And I'm like, okay, I like it. That's probably number one. I had a couple. I had a secondary one.
Bring them. I love this.
So, and I don't mean this disrespectfully, but like Rudy Gobert sometimes will do just a little too much, either offensively. Usually it's offensively, like get a block, push in transition, try and do a bounce pass, goes out of bounds. And his just the little I did too much look on the run back. And Minnesota, the like Wolves guys being like, all right, cool. And then he just defends again. Like, that's my new favorite bit where I'm just like, oh, yeah, okay. Yeah.
There was one, I forget how long ago, but he was on the short roll. Maybe Ant got trapped, ball into him. And he tried to, on the short roll, go a behind the back bounce pass. And it went off his foot straight out of bounds. And he was kind of like, ah, you can't blame me for trying, right? Like, we're playing real well, guys. You got to let me do this every once in a while. I'm doing everything else on the backside. Every once in a while, I got to try to get even with it. And everyone's like, all right, man, fine.
Those are probably my favorites. What else is a good one for me? Giannis finding things out in real time.
Talk to me about this.
So like the in-season tournament is like, wait, we made money on this game? Yeah. And then Doc Rivers in his first win gets named to the, you know, coach of the All-Star game. And Giannis is like, wait, that's a thing? That's probably up there for me. I'm trying to think, what else did I have? Oh, whenever the Orlando Magic play in a certain arena, and you can just hear the coaching staff yelling the defensive instructions. That's a fun bit for me. You can just literally hear, low man. And I'm like, okay, all right, see what's coming.
Yeah, we know what they're focused on. We know where the help's coming. All right, good to know.
So those are probably at the top of my list.
First off, you are now, the jersey's already going into the Divine Intervention rafters because I have not had a single person bring multiple pieces of joy, let alone four of them. So Steve, this is an incredibly strong start. I mean, my concern is that there's nowhere to go but down from here, but I don't believe that. I think we're going to keep elevating. We're going to raise to higher levels as we go along. Before we get up to the higher levels, though, I've a little bit of, you know, sort of sad news, upset news, but we have, you know, it's something we've been preparing for. Tuesday morning, the Philadelphia 76ers announced that Joel Embiid had a quote, successful procedure. Still have not had the unsuccessful procedure email come from a PR department. So, you know, that streak is undefeated. To address the injury to the lateral meniscus in his left knee, and he will be reevaluated in approximately 4 weeks. All-Star break comes right in the middle of that. That's still a period of about 12 or 13 games before he even gets reevaluated, and depending on how the rehab goes, potentially a longer absence than that. So, Steve, your first blush thoughts on the news that Philly's going to be without Embiid for at least the next month.
It's a bummer. It's a bummer for Joel Embiid to face injuries again. It's a bummer, especially because he's playing at such a high level every single night. Like, I mean, you imagine, just look at the game log, how many times we've seen him score 30 points this year. The 30-10 streak that he had. The man was averaging, what, 35?
Yeah, he was up near 36, yeah.
Shooting 53%, which I think only Wilt and Michael Jordan had done for a full season. So it's
decent,
like,
company.
Hey, I wish we kind of appreciated that a little bit more, as opposed to, you know, just going automatically to some of the chatter. Like, you know, jokes and memes are an inevitability, and I get it sometimes. But if all it is drawing fouls and flopping, you know, he doesn't want to play Jokic, which was funny because I swear in my head he had just played Jokic like a couple days ago.
Yes.
I think I saw that. And then I remember when they played Indiana, I was like, oh, I don't think he's playing against Denver, y'all.
Yeah, he don't look right.
And then he finished the game. I was like, oh, yeah, he's definitely not playing that game. Like, I feel like that's been the bit. Joel Embiid tweaked something. He's like, I'm good. Gets through the game. And he's like, you know what? I'm going to take a seat. And I kind of wish people would kind of let that breathe a little bit more. Because, again, remember, he's doing this off an MVP campaign. And this is a Sixer team that, once the James Harden stuff happened, expectations changed. And they were able to exceed those. So it's kind of a shame he doesn't get to finish that story in that sense, and they don't get to kind of understand how good is this version of us.
We're just going to let that go because I know for a fact that was a Cody Rhodes reference, but it's all right. We're going to come back around on that. We're going to come back around on that maybe a little bit later. And Philadelphia ties it all in really nicely done. The issue, I mean, as we, you know, sort of spin it forward and we look forward, they are now, let me look it up here. They're basically a Tyrese Maxey putting up 51 away from a 6-game losing streak since Embiid went down. You know, 26-8 with Embiid in the lineup, now 4-11 without him. And there are some confounding variables there. Other guys been in and out of the lineup. Tobias Harris has been knocked. DeAnthony Melton, you know, they've got Mick Batum been in and out. So they've had, it's not just that they've been without their main guy, it's they've been without a lot of their main guys. And now they're going to be without their main guys for a lot longer. And that the concern that you look at is like their point differential without Embiid for the season is still positive, but that's because Maxey's been cooking, right? And now you're going to have more of those minutes where neither of them are on the court because Maxey, as much as Nick Nurse might want to play Tyrese Maxey 48 minutes, he's going to have to at least ease off a little bit of that. And that's when it all goes sideways. You know, they're minus 6.4 per 100 without Embiid or Maxey on the floor, according to Cleaning the Glass. And now you're talking about, you know, there's a margin there because of how well Philly was playing earlier in the season. Three games up on the Pacers in sixth place, 3.5 games up on the Magic in seventh. 33 games to go, though. And if you're looking at Embiid being out, you know, 13, 15, 18, you know, who knows? So, you know, hopefully all goes well. The rehab shows that, you know, 4 or 5 weeks he's ready to go. You're still talking about that ramp up. You're still talking about maybe trying to get him back mid-March, a little bit later than that. There is a possibility that instead of, you know, oh, it's a couple weeks ago, we were talking about Philly being up in the can they get to two conversation. And now we're talking about, are they going to have to fight their way out from 7-8? And that's kind of a dicey spot to be in, given everything that they've put into building this roster for this season.
It's tough, especially with some of the teams that are chasing them. Indiana, with Halliburton, with Siakam, with their style of play, they're a week away from just putting up maybe a 4 or 5 game win streak. Orlando refuses to go away. They are just going to defense and Paolo and Franz you until things are just not fun. And then, oh my gosh, they're learning how to play in the clutch. Like, oh yeah, you know what? You guys are switching. Oh no. And now it's turning into, you guys are switching. Hey, Paolo, why don't you just post up?
Yeah, mash that dude.
Let's just post you up. If they send help, hey, kick it to Franz. We'll figure it out. So that's been fun to watch. And then Miami, I know it's a lot of waves, arms wildly, but I very much am in the camp of belief in Miami, as always. I know I will end up like the person, you know, when you like order something, you get the email like, oh, your package has been delivered. And it's like, oh, when did I order that? Like, I feel like my L is going to come at some point with that, but I still believe in Miami. So it's going to be a push. I think it's just going to be interesting to see how they navigate it because, you know, Tyrese Maxey has been great this year. There's been no doubt about that. The scoring has been great. He's found the rhythm with Embiid. We've seen more playmaking. Now it becomes a different level where teams are like, hey, man, not you. Like, we don't want you to score. So yeah, you're going to see
anybody else, right?
We're going to see some of those different coverages they probably would have seen in the playoffs as good reps. But he also has the weight of, like, scoring too. So now it's like, okay, how does he handle this portion? I think it'll be better off for him. But then you look at, like, a night they played Dallas, on Monday.
Yep.
40 field goals, 20 assists. 7 of those came from Maxey. And I'm like, well, who else is going to create plays? So now there's a benefit. Like, hey, maybe you find some more movement. You get some things going. But if you wanted to add a piece to your team, what would you add? And would that piece fit too with Joel Embiid? So I think that part gets tricky. But if you can find some defense, find some movement, there's still some fight.
Yeah, and I mean, the glass half full hope is like you get Embiid's debilitating injury out earlier this season, and then maybe if he is closer to right come mid-April, then, you know, we talk about a team fighting up from underneath at 7-8. Like, who do you not want to see in a play-in tournament, you know, more than Joel Embiid? But your point about, you know, what you would add to the team and what sort of decisions you would make from there. I mean, it's a pretty natural segue. Thank you so much for that alley-oop. I appreciate you. Into the sort of the decision-making process that, you know, Daryl Morey and the rest of the I almost said the Rockets front office, that the rest of the Sixers front office is going to have to navigate there. Like, do we believe that Maxey plus whatever, you know, healthy guys we can put around him, what Nurse can scheme up in terms of getting that movement, getting some more help off the ball for him, is that going to be able to keep us afloat for a month without Joel? And are we going to be able to stay close enough to that home court mix to where it does make sense for us to say, we need to get another offensive piece in here, you know? And within that context, like, who even is the offensive piece? Because what we're hearing from all of our favorite newsbreakers, including the People's Insider, shouts out Jake Fisher. I am definitely going to invite you on this show at some point, but you definitely need to not be complaining about it to Vinny Goodwill. So I know you're listening. Stop complaining to Vinny. The invitation's coming, I promise. That you're hearing that, like, a lot, you know, Malcolm Brogdon, he's like out there publicly saying, like, I don't want to go, keep me in Portland. I want to stick around. It's nice up here in the Pacific Northwest. You know, there's questions about how active Utah is going to look to be, you know, who are some of the guards? Toronto is going to have multiple suitors for Bruce Brown. You know, what are we, who is the piece that's going to go out there? And I think that what the self scout, what the evaluation that Daryl Morey has for that front, that roster, like, where are we going to get to? How can we keep it together the next month? Is it worth adding, or is it worth keeping our powder dry? I think that's going to be, that could be one of the big domino pieces to kind of look at as we head into the trade deadline.
And I thought it was interesting. And because when you said we were talking about trades, I thought I may either be the best person to do this in this format because of how I feel about it. I also may be the worst, depending on what people want to listen to.
Okay, because why do you think that?
Well, I'm bad with trade stuff. Like, I love reading about it and hearing about it and thinking about it. But like, if you ask me to generate my own ideas, I can give you more of a concept at times. Like, to pull the curtain back, I think it was like early in the Dunker Spot history. Nekias did a big Ben Simmons to the Hawks thing, and then he passed me the ball. He passed me the ball. He was like, hey, do you have any thoughts, any trade ideas or landing spots? I was like, man, I don't know. But that was early on. Like, I learned to do it. For me, I put it that way, and to bring it back to Philly, in my head, I was like, I don't think they have to make a move this year. I can understand why people would think that. But hey, we just found this with Maxi and Embiid. We still have Tobias. So, I mean, we could make a move if we need to, but at the same time, let's find out how good we are and then see what we need. And then the second thing in my head is, one, shout out to not only the newsbreakers, but all the cap folk in the world who just continuously remind me about the CBA and the second apron. And like, sometimes there'll be a trade and I have to wait to see, okay, what does this actually mean? Like the Memphis Steven Adams trade. I was right. Like, well, that's particular. And I was like, oh, tax, right. Okay. Yeah, they can't. Yeah, that makes sense. Now I get why they did that. That's like, so those kind of things spin in my head sometimes. And I don't know, maybe it's the coach brain. But like, for me, it's like, I sometimes just believe in a team or what they're trying to do. And I kind of want to see that play out sometimes. Like, for example, and I'm just riffing. Stop me at any point in time. OKC, right? Mm-hmm. Everyone always says, hey, OKC needs a big. OKC rebounding. And I hear it, but I'm also like, hey, y'all, part of what makes OKC OKC, they don't have a big. It works because they kind of just use pieces that can do big stuff, but also do the other non-big stuff. So, hey, are you 6, 7, 8, 9? Can you possibly employ some pick and roll coverages? Can you drive the basketball and shoot? You're our 5.
Yeah.
So while Andre Drummond could help them, or someone of that type, what would that look like for their offense? So that's where my head just kind of spins sometimes.
Yeah. And learning how to play, you know, left-handed with 30 games left in the season, right? Like, we've had all the success with a style that makes sense for us. Now, because we see a hole, we want to patch it, but all like that it's going to redirect our attention over there away from what we've been doing so well that's gotten us here in the first place. So yeah, a lot much to consider there, but I want to go back. We'll go off of the MB conversation to coach brain. So you have, you know, you were inside the league, you were there in Memphis, you were there in Brooklyn, and you guys, I believe during the time that you were there, you made some in-season moves while you were there. I'm wondering what that period's like while you're on the inside, like you're on the run up to the trade deadline, you're working with players, you're talking to the coaching staff, you're talking to front office folks. What is this time period like for a coach?
You hear whispers, obviously you hear news, you see news, you're kind of trying to figure out how to navigate that. Because again, you also are dealing with the human beings.
Yeah.
That are there, that are also hearing things and also feeling things and also unsure if they're still going to be around or anything like that. So it's just kind of like a weird mix of, we have business to take care of. We don't necessarily want to address that, but you are also a human being. So we value you. So hey, you're good, but you also don't know sometimes.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, you're just kind of doing your job, assuming like, hey, things are going to go one way and then they don't. Like, I think I remember I was sitting, we were on a road trip and we traded Rudy Gay.
Yes.
In the middle of the road trip. And then we just like went to OKC. Without Rudy Gay, started like Mike Conley and Jared Bayless. And the OKC was like, cool. We're going to score some points. And we were like, that's fine. That's fair. Because Rudy just had a good game too. Like, we had just won. It was like, all right, cool. And then bop, he's gone. And then Tayshaun comes in. So it was the road trip. I'm all of a sudden now trying to prepare our offensive and defensive playbook geared specifically towards what we might run for Tayshaun, while also breaking down all of our coverages so I can give it to him once we see him. And then it's like, okay, here's all this stuff. And then we played Washington and held them like 80 points or something like that. It was fun.
So it's nobody sleeps. That's job one. Nobody sleeps because everything that's in flux is also, it's not just that it's in flux. It's that it has to happen right now. And, you know, you were concerned about how we were going to get to the self-help component of it. These are people and they're all dealing with, like, you're trying to remember the details on every single thing you're doing, every coverage, where you're supposed to be in the spacing, you know, who you got on the scouting report. What are the things you got to remember? Do I close to him with high hands or not? Meanwhile, in the back of that guy's head, he's thinking, well, I saw a tweet that said I might be on the way, you know, to two time zones away from now. And it's the middle of the school year. And what are we going to do? You know, all that kind of stuff. It's a lot to navigate, man. So we could talk, you're right. We talk about these folks sometimes as functionaries on us, you know, where does that fit into this team's cap sheet? And how does that, you know, associate to a future pick equity or whatever? And then you are talking about like having to work, trying to work a guy out as he might be distracted for a very understandable reason.
Yeah. And then also if you're in between, like if you're in the video room or if you're a trusted source from like the front office and the coaches and the players, you hear whispers and everything. All of a sudden you get an email or something like, hey, can we get some tape on this person? And it's like, this is not in any of the reports. So you just got to sit there and sit on it because it's like, well, can't really talk to anyone about this.
Yeah. Let alone somebody like Jake Fisher kind of trying to hit you up on the side and be like, I heard that you guys might be cutting up tape on somebody new.
Like when I was in Memphis, I had it's safe now. I had a bunch of Andre Iguodala tape that I had cut up and put together.
Really? So this is back when he's in Denver, though.
Philly, Denver.
Around that time.
Yeah, around that time area.
Not for nothing, man. You talk about what those Grizz were looking for on the wing. You know, the Rudy-sized piece that played the defense and passed the ball. Man, all right, Memphis. Listen, I'm sorry that we have to bring it to you this way. But it's a fun counterfactual, right? We can think about it. We can plug it into 2K, crank the rosters back, see what might have happened, how that might have looked. Because in my brain, that's pretty fun. That's a pretty fun squad.
Yeah, the worst is actually when like a guy is rumored to be traded and thinks they're about to, and then they just don't.
Yeah, man. I mean, your adrenaline, everything. You know, your fight or flight is all up, and then you're like, I guess I'm just chilling. Like, I guess I just stick around here for a while. I'm pretty mad at a lot of people, but I'm not exactly sure who I should be mad at and for how long. And also, again, I got to make sure: do I close out to that guy with high hands or not? Mm-hmm. Man. The NBA is a minefield, absolute minefield. Let's tiptoe through that minefield, shall we, a little bit, Steve? So the premise here, very simple one. We set it up at the top with my friend Danny Ocean. Do you think we need one more? We're each going to go through a couple teams that we think could maybe use one more piece for the stretch run. I get what you were saying where you're like, I'm not so good at coming up with fake trades. Me neither. So I'm interested more in this as a conversation. Like, what kind of piece are we talking about here? If we can make match, great. If not, I'm not too worried about it. It's more like these are teams that, from a basketball perspective, might be in a position where they could use one more. What do we think might make some sense there? So do not worry. I don't think we're going to get aggregated on this because people listen to Jake for that, not me. So I'm not too worried about it. But you are the guest in my home here, so if you would like to go first, you are welcome to.
I guess I'll go first. Dallas.
I love this because super producer John Gennaro, avowed Mavericks fan, had some questions about that too. So let me hear from you. What kind of piece do you think that they need?
Well, the tricky part with Dallas is you have Luka. And if you have Luka, he can be any scheme. But you need pieces that fit around Luka. And you know what kind of pieces work. Which is kind of funny, like in the lead up, some of the build up of transaction talk or, hey, Dallas is looking for this player. And it always sounds like Dorian Finney-Smith.
The one that got away.
Every single time I'm like, isn't that just, anyways, it's fine. But hey, can they get a person that's tall, can defend in space? If they can get that, cool. Plug and play. Do they need another scorer? I don't know. Do they need another big? I'm not sure. They need another that piece, wing guy, three-point shooter. I'll defend multiple positions. I'll get it going. It just kind of feels like Grant Williams was supposed to be that. And I don't think it's necessarily a Grant thing, but it is a specific type of way you have to play in Dallas to a degree.
Yeah, the bloom's off the rose a little bit in terms of what that experiment was going to be like.
Yeah, so that's probably my number one nominee, Dallas.
I like that. And well, because it's there's an entry point here in that there's that we were reports and there was rumors that Dallas had been talking to Milwaukee about some framework that is grant to the Bucks for and Bobby Portis, who is like the main large sizable matching salary that the Bucks have to be able to use going back there. How do you think someone like Portis would fit into that structure?
I think he would. He can space the floor. He's going to be aggressive. He can post up. I think I'd probably be concerned about the defense. Mm-hmm. But considering Dallas's defense, he's just going to have to do his job to a degree. I guess for me, it would be like, would he just play five? Would he also be a four? Do you trust him switching? That's probably the only piece where I get tricky is just the defensive end. I think offensively it makes sense.
You wind up with like that sort of the combo bigs that are there where it's like you've got Maxi Kleber back healthy, but also not, you know, not looking like the fireball necessarily. Dwight Powell is going to be, you know, found in the floorboards of the American Airlines Center because they just cannot get rid of him. He is there forever. But you where it's like these four or five types, but they don't kind of do any. They don't do all of the jobs the same time in the same way that you were hoping for, which is what the whole goal was for Grant Williams. But the Portis, I get it. I also, and I get the level of frustration that Milwaukee has had and certain segment of Bucks fandom, if nothing else, has had with Bobby Portis and where they were looking to upgrade in their backup big. But I wonder if that's like, you take our problem, we take your problem, and we both still got problems. You know, like if it doesn't necessarily solve any of that. The Galaxy brain take that super producer John Gennaro shared, and I'm going to share it with his permission here, was it was not a shooting piece. So that's what the part where I'm not so sure about it. He looked at Orlando and he said, they got all these bigs there. They were being vocal about, we don't want to move off of Wendell Carter Jr. because the contract's great. And he's played well since he came back. Goga Batate has been like a revelation for what we want him to be defensively. Could Jonathan Isaac be somebody that, obviously there's the injury concern, but you are a Dallas defense that struggles to get stops. You are a Dallas defense that struggles to match big wings, like we're talking about, someone who is size and shape and versatility that can get those stops. Could you see your way, if you were a Dallas person, to something like Tim Hardaway Jr. going out, Jonathan Isaac, maybe something else coming back? Or is that too much taking away from what you need in terms of bucket getting?
My concern comes with the bucket getting to a degree. That's probably my thing. If you could somehow keep Tim, I might understand it a little bit more because I think Jonathan Isaac does fit the mold of what they want defensively for sure. Now, it might be the opposite of the Bobby Portis trade-off where, hey, offensively, you know what I mean? Like, do you need to have Jonathan Isaac and Derrick Jones Jr.? I say that with no disrespect, but kind of like similar
issues.
Yeah, it
becomes duplicative in the other direction.
So I would be like, can we keep Tim and also maybe add that? And then maybe we'll just be able to have some like lineup versatility or harmony where, hey, you're out, now you're in, and we can just kind of attack it that way. So I get the concept. I just, if you're giving up Tim now and he's your best bench scorer.
And maybe one of the best in the entire league. Like, you know, he's going to be high up on some six-man of the year ballots for the way he's been producing.
Yeah, does it get a little tricky then now where it's just like, or do you just say, hey, Kyrie, you're back. Here you go, buddy.
Yeah, that's the thing. You wind up with the Luka version of the old Bulls Archangel defense, save us, Michael, you know, where it's like, it's got to be Luka or it's got to be Kyrie. But I mean, which is to some degree baked into the structure as it is. But yeah, I get what you're saying. And this is, I think the structure, the challenge that a lot of these teams and front offices are going to face is that you don't wind up robbing Peter to pay Paul, right? Like, you know, we're trying to plug a gap in one area and we take our finger out of the leak in the other area. We start, you know, taking on water. So I think Dallas is a very interesting one because, as you mentioned, there's the perpetual pressure of, we got to maximize Luka. We've also gone heavy in with our assets to get Kyrie and to sort of build this structure out. And they've made some strides, you know, the offseason moves to bring in Derek Lively, you know, the way that they've reorganized and it's sort of given themselves that three-piece core moving forward. There's a lot to be excited about, but there's also a lot of, we're not necessarily trying to build for a multiple years from now because where Luka is at in terms of the league hierarchy and the way he's playing now and what you invested in Kyrie for these next couple of years, it demands more present day focus. So it's a tricky spot to be in. Going back to Milwaukee, well, they were first up on my list there. And in part because I'm interested in just the under the hood component of it. We know, obviously, their big deadline move was firing the coach. You know, you don't have to make a salaries match for that. You just got to go pay three coaches to do that. 1-3 since Doc Rivers takes over. And I'm wondering, just under the hood, though, how have you felt about the process of the way things have been looking under Doc? What do you think has been shifting there? Do you think there's some positives to take away from it?
Well, it gets tricky because I've been very much in the I like what the Bucks are attempting to do category. They just need to kind of keep doing it. Mm-hmm. Now with Doc, you feel the defensive effort feels a little bit stronger. I'll put it that way. Mm-hmm. And I say that having been in the camp that, okay, the scheme is the scheme. The personnel is the personnel. And I'll raise my hand here real quick, because a lot of times you talk about the Bucks defense, everyone's like, man, Dame can't guard. Malik Beasley can't guard. And I want to just pause sometimes and be like, hey, so if you have a Bucks team issued gear on, you can't walk in the building with that mindset. You have to find a way to make that work.
Solve the problem.
Yeah. Like, okay, let's let you be more active on the ball. Or if you're in one-on-one, let's show some help. Let's figure out a way to give you your job. You do your job. We defend as a team. And for me, it was like, can they just get some more team defense? Can they clean the transition defense up? Can they keep the ball in front and show help? It feels like since, you know, over these course of the games, it's been uneven, but we've seen more, probably some of the better rotations from Giannis over this 4-game stretch. We've seen them be able to execute double teams and rotate out of it. We've seen them be able to help each other. So that's a positive. I think offensively, it's more just having more of a purpose. Like, the offense hasn't been an issue to a degree. You know, I think more people want Dame and Giannis action together, which I understand. You know, it's a pressure point, but they also still have to find their chemistry. That's something I always point out to people. Like, they're still trying to figure out their counters and everything, because sometimes Giannis is ready to screen and Dame's thinking reject, or Dame is looking to snake a pick and roll and Giannis is rolling as well.
And yeah, so they're, it's just like banging into each other as they go forward.
There's those little tweaks. You get some more reps. That's why you end up with like Chris and Giannis pick and roll, because they just, you know, chemistry. And the Dame and Brooke pick and roll sometimes feels stronger at times, because, you know, Brooke can pop or can roll. Dame can kind of just play off that. So I think offensively, you're still looking to see what kind of movement are they going to add, but it's just they felt more decisive. So that's been the biggest thing for me. More decisive on both ends of the floor, more activity defensively. They just have to keep building on those type of habits and clean up the little things. If they can get better in transition, be stronger in the half court defensively, I think they have enough pressure points, enough offense to figure it out. So it's just, I've liked the base. I've liked the process. Now, can you build on top of it?
And to your point, the transition defense, I mean, everybody has been pointing that out, and justifiably so. The thing that's interesting is, like, they're, according to looking at cleaning the glasses transition numbers, they're giving up more points per possession in transition, but they went from dead last in how often they were letting teams run to, like, top five. And only a 4 or 5 game sample, but like, if a team's running 17% of the time versus 12 or 13% of the time, that gap is gigantic. Like, you can give up more points per possession, but fewer possessions of it makes a really big deal. And like, just getting back and scrambling, even if you're scrambling, but if you can scramble with Giannis on the ball, that's going to scare the hell out of somebody and say, all right, let's pull it back. Let's figure it out. Right. And so, and that was something, you know, Doc was pretty clear about right away. Like, that's an area where, you know, we need to get back better. We are playing aggressive at the point of attack, but we're not forcing turnovers. They're doing that a little bit better these last couple of games. And part of that, as you mentioned, it's against Dallas. It's when you trap, how you sort of put length on the ball, and then how you rotate behind it, where you're like, are you actually engaged with it? And are you actually going there with a purpose? And so there's an aspect, as I think to your point, like, do that stuff better, and maybe you don't need much saving from outside. That said, we know John Horst and the general manager, the front office there, is going to be aggressive. You know, they don't have a 5 second round picks to send out for Jay Crowder or Nikola Mirotic anymore. But I'm wondering for them if it's something like, you know, the stuff that they've got basically in the cupboard is, there's Bobby Portis's deal again, you know, where there's the Rob Peter to pay Paul kind of situation, as we mentioned before. But there's Pat Connaughton, who has been an important part of that roster for a number of years, but hasn't been quite what they'd hoped for this season. And the 2024 second round pick from the Blazers, which is probably going to wind up near the top of the second round, I believe it's, right now would be like 34th or 35th. So it's like, first off, it's identify which spot you think needs the most help. Is it point of attack defense? Is it another backup big, so you feel better even if you need to de-emphasize Bobby? Is it another wing so that you can go to more Giannis at the five, you know, get you more stretch in your lineups? And then how many of those kind of things can you address with what you got in the cupboard? And so, like, to me, if you can get Toronto invested in the idea, you know, we saw that the Raptors do a deal where obviously the draw for them in the Knicks deal was getting Emmanuel Quickley back, but they got that high second round pick. I think it was the Pistons second round pick. And the spin on it, the sell on it was it's basically a late first. And it's actually even a little bit better than a late first because you don't got to pay the luxury tax. You know, it's not a guaranteed salary slot. And you could do the Hinkie special and get the guy for 4 years at a lower rate, whatever, whatever. So could you similarly sell that and bring Bruce Brown in? And is that somebody where that's point of attack defense? We've seen him play, backup point guard, essentially off of really good bigs. We've seen him be a complimentary, it can be an off-ball piece, not maybe the catch and shoot option that this season that you've been hoping for, but we know he's been able to do that, can certainly attack a closeout, you know, get downhill, make some noise and make some passes off of that. So that, and like, if you're looking for a player that can be both a backcourt addition and a wing addition that helps you get to more Giannis at the five, and then also sometimes play like a big if you need him to, like that. That's a Swiss Army knife for me that I think answers a lot of potential options. I have not heard them in connection with the Bruce Brown deal a lot, but that's one where I wonder, like, if you could get the Raptors on board for that, does that maybe plug a few of those holes?
I like the idea. The first thought in my head is, hey, Bruce Brown, you can be a screener as well.
Yes.
You screen for everyone. That intrigues me. Defensively, I think he can guard multiple positions. So you probably feel more comfortable with Bruce Brown guarding player A, B, or C. And that could at least take some pressure off some of the other guys that have to do it. So I like the idea of that, actually. I hadn't thought of it.
See, this is what I'm talking about. It's a podcast where I get to feel good about me because smart people like the things that I say. That's really what we're trying to get down to. It's a vanity project more than anything else. Divine intervention, colon. It's a vanity project. Put that on a bumper sticker. Steve, do you have a second team that you want to bring up?
Chicago.
Okay. Now, here's a blind spot I got to be honest about. I get bored about the Bulls broadly a lot. And there are some Bulls fans, very smart, smart, keen-eyed Bulls fans who have been like, you don't really write about them a lot. And I'm like, I don't really know what to write about it most of the time. So talk to me about the spot the Bulls are in. What do you think that's sort of intriguing for them?
My thought, and obviously Zach LaVine hopefully gets well. Mm. Various opinions on this Bulls core, and if it's run its course, I understand it. My concern level came, I was looking and I was like, hey, a lot of the talk about Toronto was the return they got for OG, for Pascal. And I kind of looked at Chicago and I was like, hey, are y'all kind of getting close to that zone real quick? Because, like, DeMar's expiring and Andre Drummond's going to be a free agent and Alec Caruso has another year. Do you just need to add something? Do you need one more? Do you need one something?
Do you need three less?
do you need to just, is it time? Like, are they just going to have to, okay, you know what? We kind of have to do something. Or is this just going to quietly end? That was mainly my point.
Yeah, no, it's a good one. I mean, because you want to feel, the Raptors comparison is an apt one, because if you just want to feel forward momentum in one direction or another, right? As opposed to just feeling like you're running in place, you're on the treadmill and you're just kind of stuck between stations there. And with Caruso, we value our own guy so much, and understandably so. Like, Alex Caruso would make all the sense in the world everywhere. Like, all of these teams we're talking about, Milwaukee, I don't think has enough to get into that conversation because the Bulls are looking for all the money in the world off of it. But like, he would be perfect there. Philly, you know, you're looking for another guard who can do a little bit and then guard all over the place next to Maxey and, you know, off the bench. Like, you had him and D'Anthony Melton. It's like sending two guys out there to swing in sledgehammers. Like, I love the idea of the chaos of that. All of these teams that are looking for dogs, like, be perfect. But with that, you'd think that a market that would be frothy for a player like that would result in an offer that you'd take. And it does not seem to be the case that the Bulls are just like, nah, man, we can't let him go for less than X plus five, you know, like whatever it winds up being. And like the selfish part of me is going like, all right, well then, I don't know, Oklahoma City, go throw 9 picks at him and just make it happen and see, you know, see what we can do. Like, just figure it out, because I would like to see that guy in games of consequence. And I'd like to see the Bulls at least move in a direction, because there's something worth being excited about with the way Kobe White's been playing. There's something to look forward to there, I think. But, you know, you got to let the past die in order to get excited about that. And like, DeMar DeRozan is a guy that would, like, all of these playoff teams that need somebody to get a bucket late in a game. Like, if you're a defense late in a playoff game and you see DeMar DeRozan up there calling for the screen or getting the switch, like, that's not a fun place to be. That's not an exciting option to have to deal with. So there's all these sorts of options where you're like, that guy should have value to other teams on the market. What is preventing you from recouping or, you know, like acting? And I wonder, some of it is just, you know, Bulls fans often get so frustrated with ownership. And I understand why, with the idea of like, we'd rather maybe get one or two gate receipts for a play-in or a first round playoff berth, and then like be competitive enough and get a little bit of playoff revenue. And then that's all she wrote. And maybe that's it. Maybe that's where where the story ends. But they feel like a team, and in the same way that the Raptors were the last couple of trade deadlines, like if they loosened it up, they could be a source for a lot of teams to get better. I just don't know that they're going to, they might just want to try to cash that one more check.
It gets dicey.
Listen, easy for me to spend Jerry Reinsdorf money. In fact, I would love the opportunity to do so, but that's not going to happen today. I think the Bulls are an interesting one. I wish they would be more interesting because they were more decisive. I worry a little bit that it's not going to happen for them there. All right. You know me, Steve. You know I'm a homer. You know I am somebody who's not to be relied upon for unbiased analysis. And that's why we're going to talk about the New York Knicks real quick. Because I don't want to make every trade about Bruce Brown. But I do want to talk about the existential question of, do we need another dog or do we need another scoring threat? And so for this Knicks team as constructed 2 weeks ago or a week ago, whenever Randall went down with the shoulder injury, I would have been like, get the dog guy, be as unpleasant to play against as humanly possible. And yes, maybe Bruce Brown doesn't create his own shot in the same way that you would be hoping for as you're looking for that replacement for second unit offense for Emmanuel Quickly. Right. But if you are saying I can basically build the whole plane out of Josh Hart's and Dante DiVincenzo's and, Bruce Brown's, I like that idea. I like surrounding Brunson and Randall with multi-positional defenders who can all do a little bit of everything and are going to do it with a snarl on their face. And now we're seeing the wages of the injuries come to roost for New York, right? We're seeing, since Julius Randall's been out and now you've got OG Anunoby out, and now you've got Quentin Grimes missing some time, and there's just such a gigantic creative burden on Jalen Brunson right now. And teams, the Lakers did it the other night on national TV in front of everybody, and God's eyes and everybody else's eyes to see, double the hell out of him, trap him, swarm him with length, make somebody else do something. And it's funny that he's dealing with the same problems Luka did, because he was the guy that was supposed to make it easier for Luka to deal with all that, and now he's dealing with that on his own. And the Knicks, absent these other injured guys, don't have those answers. So the question to me, as Leon Rose and company go into the next couple of days, is, do we feel confident enough that we're going to get everybody back and healthy and, be fully operational such that the add a dog makes more sense? Or are we a little bit worried about, we don't have enough offense the other way? So then your package that you're dangling out there of Evan Fournier's expiring deal, a first, maybe Grimes, whatever it might be, is better served on a Jordan Clarkson. Or if Malcolm Brogdon can't convince the Trailblazers to keep him around out there, that sort of push pull of, we're built with this identity defensively, but also maybe we need a little more juice. Which way do they go?
My mind goes to, which would they just want some level of versatility? you know, on top of the dog? Can we find a dog that can also shoot? Or is it just, hey, we need to turn Evan Fournier into something?
Yeah.
And that's where my mind is kind of stuck. I think that more defense would help. I don't know if it's they have to do it because of the amount of guys they have that could fill that role. I think for me, it's can we turn that into an offensive player that's going to help us both now and later? And so it's like someone said PJ Washington, and I was intrigued, but I was like, how much would PJ, like, how much would he help them in theory, especially once Julius comes back? Like, PJ feels like a Julius is out type of move. Brogdon seems like the no-brainer to me, just because he kind of gives you a little bit of both in a sense. Where, hey, I can defend a few of these folks, and I'll also score on that end and can make some really fun lineups out of it. The problem for me there is also Tibbs in his semi-allergy to playing small, unless absolutely forced to. So that's why I'm like, okay, how much is in the bag there? Would you rather have Brogdon or Brown? I'll cut straight to it.
I think I'd rather have Brown. I think I'd rather have somebody that I believe Tibbs would play, that I believe gives you an option. Like, if you lose one of those other similarly styled and sized guys, could be that again. And somebody that I just saw play that kind of meaningful role at a high level in games that mattered. Not that I don't think Malcolm Brogdon could do that, but that, yeah, I want, like, the idealized version of him, the shooting component to it, that he, you know, he's going to take that second unit offense. I like it. I wonder if it runs counter to what they've been doing enough to the point where it's like, Tibbs just gets mad and decides he's not using him. And he's going to be, you know, silent. He's going to stick with 48 minutes of Brunson and Hart no matter what, even if you have a shooter that's sitting there that could be of use. But I get the point. I get the argument. It's a better balance for sure. But there's also part of me, and this is maybe just the, you know, I grew up on the 90s Knicks kind of misery in my brain and my soul, where I'm like, if you can just make other people hurt as much as you hurt, you can go a long way, right? Hurt people hurt people. And maybe that's what the Knicks need to be. So I don't know. That's my thought on that.
Well, can I ask a respectfully musty question based on some of the things you've said? So I heard we got dog, we got offense, we got Tibbs. Are you ready to learn Alec Burks?
get ready to speak Alec Burks, buddy. No, you're absolutely right. I mean, there's a world where it's a second or two. I mean, provided the Pistons actually trade somebody, they're also in that. We're asking for an awful lot for everybody kind of mix. That Bojan Bogdanovic on the Summer Jam screen again. But yeah, I mean, that could be it. And that'd be a bit of a bummer if that was the end result of all of it. But I was also ready. I mean, a year and a half ago, 2 years ago, I was ready to be like, Alec Burks, point guard, let's run it. All good. So that might be the middle ground. You know, you're less, fewer assets out the door kind of path. And maybe that helps. But I think they have shown enough since the OG deal to me to be like, it's worth a big swing. And I wonder if, Leon Rose and company have been very patient. This might be the opportunity to go a little bit more all in. So I'm interested to see if they are, and Brown, this is my last thing on this and we'll move out, because we got to start moving through these a little bit more, because I'm talking too much, as I do on my own show often. But Brown, as somebody with the team option for next year, affords you some of that same flexibility that the Fournier contract does. You can bring him in, you can guarantee it for next year, and you could still be able to use him in star trade for star player X as a matching salary next year. So there's still some flexibility with it. He might help today. And maybe I don't know, man. I just might want to have a kennel. That might be what I want to have happen. we're going to lightning round on our last one here. So Steve, who is your third team?
Brooklyn. I was going to flip it on you and say, can we have
all
one
right,
less?
Let's hear it.
Can we have one less? Can we have one less wing? Maybe it's, can we
again,
have one less?
Yeah. Show me the team that doesn't, it couldn't use Dorian Finney-Smith, Royce O'Neal, you know, et cetera. It's just I think that's a question of just like, are the price tags going to come down? But yeah, I mean, like, I think why Dallas isn't just saying, yes, we actually do want Dorian Finney-Smith back. I don't know why they're like, nah.
Pride.
Go with before the fall, though, my friend. And listen, if you can make Luka happy by getting his mans back, like, why, you know, why not do that? Why, you know, why it's close the circle. It's a, you know, I don't know. Seems like a nice idea. But yes, you're right. The Nets, we know that they're not going to move off of Mikal Bridges unless bowled over. They don't seem to, even with being bowled over, they don't seem to be interested in doing that. So then it's who else? I wonder if, I mean, they just paid Cam Johnson. I wonder if somebody would come in for him, but that's maybe a bit too rich for somebody's blood, especially considering he hasn't been lighting the world on fire this season. But yeah, I feel like I should be surprised if Dorian Finney-Smith and Royce O'Neal are on the Nets this time next week. But you know, the Nets have surprised me before. So a team that, I mean, I don't know, this is my last one. It's the Clippers, because do they need one more? I don't know. I look at that rotation. First off, I just look at, they have been a wrecking crew for 2.5 months now, right? They got their business done early and they've just been dealing since then. And, you know, you get Mason Plumlee back. You get Ivica Zubac just came back. And they go like 10 deep with dudes. You can go with Zubac, Daniel Theis, and Mason Plumlee up front. You can run any of them or not run any of them. You know, Zubac has been a huge anchor for their defense when he's been healthy. A lot of, you know, great chemistry in the pick and roll with Harden. On the wing, show me many teams that are going to be messing with Kawhi Leonard, Paul George, Norm Powell, Terrence Mann. People talk about Amir Coffey as like, oh, that's like the, because he's the lowest name on that totem pole. But like, yeah, you can maybe improve on that spot with some talent. That dude's good. Like, that dude has been really helpful for them. Super important. Like, the way everybody was like fawning over, and understandably so, justifiably so, the way that Nick Batum was playing in Philly off of Embiid, like, find me a guy who's going to shoot 67% on twos, 45% on threes, and guard four positions without asking for anything. Like, they don't make a whole lot of those. That's a really nice guy to have on the cheap, right? Mm-hmm. And then you got, it's at the point, like, Russ as the backup point guard slash small ball five on that team now, where he's, it's like, all right, get ready to screen like you were doing this, you know, that in Houston, you know, like when they got rid of centers and they were like, I guess Russ is our center now. He's basically like mini Giannis out here screening and diving. There's a lot there. I don't know. Like, do you, they're in that spot where it's like, you are so close to having everything that maybe it makes sense to try to get whatever that last finishing piece is, but I don't even know what the hell it is.
Is it more the ability for them to add something? Cause I don't even know if they have a need. It's just, we could.
Yeah, but that's right. But that's what I'm saying. Like, so yeah, maybe you figure out, like, I don't know. Is there like, because you're basically talking about like BJ Boston and Bones Highland and like a second rounder or something. And is there like a $6 million player, a $7 million player that's changing the life of the Clippers? I don't know. You know, like maybe you, I don't know. Like, is there like a Caleb Martin type that you turn him into? And then there's like another guy like that, which would be cool. But like, I don't know. It's when you get to this level, that level of success, when you're like, yeah, do you do it to do it, right? Because like you may, because next year you're not going to be able to with the second apron and the penalties for adding a guy. But like, they've just been so good. I don't know if they, maybe you don't mess with success, right?
It's the vibes are high too. Like, I mean, we got Zubac throwing Westbrook into ice. Like, I feel like do you touch that harmony right now?
These are the kinds of questions that everybody's going to have to try to figure out. I think that's like, it's the next couple of days are going to tell us a lot about where teams think they are. And I'm really fascinated to find that out, but we're going to move on from that. We're going to move to something that we like to call the closing five, because Steve Jones, as a certified ball knower, you know that how you finish is more important than how you start.
Yes.
So it's five questions for our guest here. Here we go. Question number one. You have had the opportunity to coach NBA Summer League basketball. It was when you were with the Nets, right?
Yes. Yes. I got to coach one game in Orlando and one game in Las Vegas.
It's two more games than I've ever coached. So when you look back at that experience, what's the most challenging part of trying to get those guys together in that time frame? And what did you take away from it most as a coach?
Summer League is fun. There's a lot of hunger. And, you know, you have the group of people that are like technically on your team trying to make your team, and then also just there trying to like continue to pursue basketball. So it's like a fun mix of personalities, and you got a lot of passion. You got a lot of hunger. You got to bring everyone together. and try and cram a whole lot of concepts into a very short time span. So if you ever watch Summer League, you can tell which side of the ball they focused on practice very early. Like if you see the team that's just running, taking early shots, oh, they're working on offense. And if you hear the teams that's clapping and the bench, yeah, on defense, okay, they were doing defense all week. So that's always a challenge. As far as purely coaching, rotation was number one for me. I was like, okay, yeah, I do have to consider that. Like, I feel like people are always making the joke like, oh, rotation. You gotta remember, you're sitting there, you're watching, you're thinking about adjustments, you're trying to help, and then it's like, oh yeah, I gotta sub. We gotta do that. Yeah, I gotta get guys in. And especially summer league, so some guys haven't played for X amount of games, so now they gotta play this game, or it gets tricky sometimes with that. So those are probably the top challenges there. It was weird. It was weird in Orlando. So I'm sitting there. I'm like, why am I here? I think I coached safe space. I think I coached the one in Orlando because everyone had a flight. And I was on the late flight. If we're being 1,000% honest, that could be self-deprecating. I'm pretty sure that's the only reason I got to coach that one. But I was like, why am I here? And then I look across and it's Patrick Ewing sitting down. I'm like, why am I coaching against Patrick Ewing? What am I doing? And then I just went ahead and did it. But it was mainly just, it was more stressful the in-between because they told me like that morning. I was like, well, let's drop some ATOs, buddy.
I'm just going to assume that Patrick Ewing was just like peerless. He was flawless in the ATO game. You know, what he had his team running at that point, I'm sure was just pristine because he can do no wrong in my eyes. So I'm just going to guess that, you know, you talk about having the L hand, you know, coming to you, FedEx, maybe Patrick just sent one of those along the way. And I listen, no shame in being beaten by the not actually the best. Question number two. This is pretty basic and broad, but bear with me. You have done video work at the highest level of the NBA. When you're if I'm a fan just watching basketball and I want to get a little bit smarter about watching basketball, what's something that I should be paying attention to that maybe they don't talk about a lot on TV?
My number one tip would be don't look at the ball. My number two tip would be, are we talking offense or defense?
Dealer's choice.
Well, defensively, try and look at the screens or the screeners, if that makes sense. That will tell you what the defense is trying to do to a degree. Once there's a screen that happens, go look on the weak side and see what they're trying to do after you take a peek at the two people involved in the action, if that makes sense. Because you'll get a sense of what they want to do defensively. And that was one of the things I struggled with because it was always, was that a good shot? Did the defense take something away? What were they trying to take away? And so you have to pull back and look, okay, they were trying to fight over. The big was trying to get to the level. They didn't want him to shoot. Okay, I got that part. What were those two doing? Oh, those two were staying at home. They didn't want their guys to shoot. I don't think they were supposed to do that. Oh, they gave up the role. And then you kind of build on that and you watch it the next time. Okay, they did it better this time. So those two guys showed help. Now I can see what they're trying to do. Does that make sense?
It does. Well, because you're trying to learn the rules of how each team is playing. And you're also trying to get a sense of like, do we want that guy going baseline? Do we want him going middle? Do we want to try to take away that? Do we, you know, who are the shooters that are going to make us break our rules? All those sorts of things. But just as a general level, I think people don't necessarily know, don't look at the ball. It's a really hard thing to break yourself of the habit of doing because you're used to trying to think of like, well, that guy's going to shoot. I should pay attention to that. But you're absolutely right. Like it's the component of this is a 5-man. All of these things are 5 or 10 person rotation, you know, like interpersonal dynamics at all times. And so there's a lot to pay attention to. But I love that idea of like when there's a screen, look at what else is happening.
And then offensively cuts. I always say cuts. Look at the timing of cuts. Look at when people cut, why they cut. Look for the cuts. That's the one for me offensively. It sounds weird to say don't look at the ball, but I promise if you kind of like look at the court, your eye will catch the ball. Like you will see it. You will still see it. I promise.
I love that. And my old colleague at Yahoo Sports, Greg Wyshynski, now covers the NHL for ESPN, had a book called Don't Look at the Puck. And I think that was the same idea. Like you're looking at all these bodies moving around. Why are they moving around there? Same principle. So I love that. And also I get to shout out my man, Wish. Question number three. On the dunker spot, you and Nikias also turn your analytical eye very often to the WNBA in the midst of free agency and their offseason right now. So what's some one team that has piqued your interest with the way they are moving this offseason?
Shoot, man, a whole lot. But the Phoenix Mercury for me, Ishbia said, no, I'm serious. I'm putting all my pieces in. Give me Natasha Cloud. Give me Rebecca Allen. Hey, give me Kalia Copper. We are going to win. And so it's been fun to watch them kind of respond to, okay, the Aces and the Liberty up here. Let's go ahead and put all these chips in. And you kind of just see as new ownership comes in and there's more investments, those teams become more attractive, especially when you consider like NECA going to Seattle, Skylar Diggins-Smith going to Seattle, and they have a facility that's opening up, and Phoenix with their facility that's opening up. And so it's just kind of like the response to the Aces and the Liberty last year, like, hey, we could also do that, just so you're aware. So I would say it's going to be a very competitive thing. Phoenix has got me like intrigued because they just, every time I think they're done swinging for the fences, they just keep adding. And I'm like, how are y'all doing this?
Money's not real. Salary cap's not real. It's all fake. That Ishby is going to make everything is constantly competitive. I like that idea. Question number four. You are someone who's built a committed audience on Twitter. You know, folks come back daily, you know, insights on the plays and which teams are doing what, how they try to accomplish it, and whether they're doing well or poorly at it, which is great. But it also means having to kind of be on Twitter a lot. And I'm just wondering, like, how you balance that. Like, it's feeding the beast. It's being part of this conversation. And then also you got to wade through a lot of conversations maybe you don't necessarily want to be part of. How's your mental health doing with this, Steve, on the social media front?
It's a give and take because you said you do have to feed the beast and you kind of have to. And like, I don't want to just assume everyone is going to be the people that are in my mentions. And I feel like there's been a shift overall. Once it was more engagement, you saw more people doing more of the engagement stuff, which also leads to more people yelling about other stuff. And so I'm not like a big block or mute guy. I understand why people do. But for me, I'm like, oh, this is practice. I don't know this is a person, but this is a person. So let me attempt to treat them like a person because I don't know. You know, for me, I'm like, yes, I could assume this is the worst troll on earth, but this could just be a dude who just got yelled at and now get in his pickup truck. And the last thing he wanted to see was an OG Anunoby defensive rotation. And now he remembers that he had an argument 10 minutes ago and now he's mad at me. Okay, are you actually mad at me? Let me find out. I will give an accept. Like, hey, what do you think about this? I'll go back and forth. Now, if you come with some sauce, I might come with some sauce depending on how I feel that day.
Right.
If I've seen 15 of the same comment and you are number 16, I might have just a smidge of smoke for you. Just a little professional sarcasm petty just to let you know, hey, I could. Just so you know, like, just a quick reminder. Every, like, 7 to 10 business days, I have, like, just a moment where I'm like, you know, I don't have to be that nice, respectfully. And then most times when you go back and forth with someone, you'll get to like the real issue or their real thought. Right. And they'll just cover it with energy. And like, I don't know if you've had 10 of the same arguments or all this other good stuff. But I think it's changed because people like want to be right, which I understand. People want to, but more importantly, people want to be seen and heard. And so I value that portion more. It's where, hey, I'm actually listening to you. Like, I want you to know that I see what you're saying. I'm going to give you a chance to say it. I'm going to go back and forth with you. And like, there's more times than not where you have a back and forth and it ends with that person saying respect or I understand or you get to that portion. For me, that's just the whole point of it. It's interaction. I've never understood the concept of like, I feel like if you have check mark or a large following, you become dehumanized to a degree. And now it's just like, well, let me just troll you or let me reply real quick or let me just get this off. It's like, I get it, but I'm like, I'm not a concept. I'm a human. Like, I'm right here. Like, why are you so gotten to? It's like, I'm not gotten to. I'm responding. That's the whole point of the app.
The goal is to have a conversation, right? Yeah.
And it's like, yeah, I'm a human being, but it can get tricky sometimes. I got to take some breaks every now and then. It just also the algorithm changed. So a lot of times, especially for how I do it, like if I just see something during a game, I'm like, oh, that was cool. Let me just share it real quick. Mm-hmm. Someone might not see it till the next day.
Yes.
Like I did like a Cam Thomas read it was just a pick and roll, and he saw the play, saw the help, made us get past. I was like, oh, that's cool. Cool to see him doing that. Next day, someone's like, man, I don't know what to tell you. That's a basic basketball play. And I was like, you're correct. But in my head, I was like, you just saw this. Like, you assumed that I was putting this as hype. You didn't see the time or right. You have none of the context. You just like, oh, man, see, that's what all you basketball people hyping up these basic plays. I'm like, no. It's just, that was cool. That's when I did it. But you don't have the chance to go through all the context. You just got to listen to the noise.
Cam Thomas is a perfect avatar for that discussion in terms of Hooper purity and the responses that generates. I love that. But yeah, I think back to last week, we had Justin Rowan on talking about the Cavs. His weekly recommendation was don't engage as often as I do. And I was like, man, I hear you. Getting better is an active practice. We're all trying to get our reps in on that for sure. But that is a wonderful way of thinking about it. Like, let's actually try to make this an engaged conversation where we're treating one another like people. Imagine that. Question number 5. I got one more dealer's choice for you. There are 3 people that you have crossed paths with over the years that I'm very interested in. One is Bill Walton, who was the color commentary partner of your father, the late, great Steve Snapper Jones. 2 is Zach Randolph, who was a colorful member of the Memphis Grizzlies during the time there. And 3 is Kevin Garnett, who needs no introduction, but was there during your time in Brooklyn. It is a dealer's choice. I would like one story about any of those people that you are willing to share on mic. And I will remind you that we can bleep out whatever you need bleeped out.
Let me go KG, because I can remember one off the top of my head. All right. So we were playing in Orlando, I want to say. And so we were on the bus. And so with the bus, there's a pecking order. Players usually in the back. Coaches are in the front. I think I was still in the video room. So I was kind of in between.
In the middle.
Where, like, okay, depending on who's writing, I get pushed back. If no one's there, I get pushed up. But the players usually trusted me because I just did my job. I didn't care. So they didn't care if I sat back. Some people would not be allowed to sit further back on the bus. Like, nah, you go up there. Luckily enough, I was good. So one of the most fun parts about it is you just kind of get to hear, like, stories. And KG was telling a story this day. And it was about, I think it was about Irvin Johnson, the big Irvin Johnson, that Magic. And he was telling a story about in the practice that there was a post up and he was yelling, I'm good. Like, I'm good. Like, I'm good on defense. Like, I'm good. I'm good.
No help.
I don't need any help. I'm good. We play Orlando that night. And by the way, the bus cracking up with the story, it was funny. We play Orlando that night. They throw the ball to Channing Frye in the post. He's being guarded by KG. This man, KG, just starts yelling, I'm good, the entire possession. And it's even funnier because he had just told the story that day. And you can, I believe it's still YouTubeable. You can find it. He is screaming, I'm good. And it's gotten to the point where Channing Frye is now engaged in a battle of combat. He knows he now has to shoot this basketball. But KG is yelling, I'm good, and also giving max KG effort. And so he ends up shooting, and he did not score. To this day, it was one of the funniest things in the world. So that's my KG story that I come off the top of my head. I'll give you a bonus one, too.
I would love it.
So we were, when I first joined in Brooklyn, we, like before training camp, you have a little thing with the coaches and the players and staff. I always felt like those little meetings were always, hey, these are the people that actually work here, and here's what they do. So you're going to see these faces a lot and direct these questions to this department. But anyways, I walked up there. I was new, gave my little video speech with my guy, Mike Jones, TCU legend. And we get off. You just hear KG, video, I thought y'all was the new security. Because I was a little buffer back then. And I was like, all right, thank you for welcoming me. That's Kevin Garnett cracking jokes on me. I feel great.
That's perfect. That's exactly what we were looking for. Also, super producer John Gennaro notes Channing Frye shot an air ball on that play.
Yeah, there we go. See?
It's why you need a super producer behind the glass, ladies and gentlemen. Steve, that's wonderful. Thank you so much. We're going. Last thing we do on the way out here is a weekly recommendation. Does not have to be about basketball. Can be about anything. Previous examples have included like popsicles, taking a walk, going to the library, making a baked ziti, books about facial recognition technology, records people's like, whatever, you something that you think is cool and good that the folks listening might benefit from. So Steve Jones Jr., any recommendation that you could give the people?
The next chance you get, if you have some time in the morning, you have some time clear in the morning, get a candle, light it, listen to the new Andre 3000 flutes.
Ooh.
Dive into your favorite activity. Reading, whatever it is. Give yourself 20, 25 minutes of that. Thank me later.
I love that. I love that for a lot of reasons. It's the first time we've had candles lit on this show. So that feels like a momentous occasion for me. We don't have a whole lot of flute music talk on the show. So this is great. Please take that to heart, listeners of this show. Mine is, it's a little conceptual, but give me a minute. Re-examine your rules. Chances are you've got some things in your head where you're like, if I don't have enough time to do like a full version of this, I can't get into it. Like if I'm going to go out for a run, I can't, but I can only get out for like maybe 2 miles. Like it's not really worth getting out. Why? Why is that not worth 2 miles is better than no miles, right? I don't have time to read like a full novel right now. All right. So who cares? Read something shorter than that. Or don't judge yourself at all and read a comic book or read a magazine or read whatever. Don't force yourself. What you're doing and what I'm doing when I do that is I'm letting myself off the hook. I'm finding reasons not to do that thing that might help me out in one way or another, that might give my brain a break, that might, you know, help me feel a little bit better, because it's like, it's not the ideal version of that thing. That's an easy way to not get any better, right? It's not to not improve at all, to not give yourself that breather. Re-examine your rules. Chances are you maybe put yourself in a little bit of a box on some level about something that you might not even really realize that you've been restricting yourself about, but a little bit's better than nothing, and hold yourself accountable for at least getting that little bit, because chances are there's some way that you can get better that you're not getting better today because you've let yourself think you can't. So that's one. Re-examine your rules. Are they serving you or are they not? This is how I justify reading comic books. All right. That's going to do it for us here on Divine Intervention this week. Steve Jones Jr., I need to recommend to everybody, as we add to our weekly recommendations, the Dunker Spot podcast. You and Nekias Duncan talking about OG Anunoby and the bench, talking about random folks doing defensive slides. The most sicko content there is, but it's beautiful and it's wonderful. I know you can find it wherever you're finding this podcast. I know that you are also doing more work with JJ Redick. Is there something else that we can point people toward? Where can people find some of the you and JJ? Where is that work going?
Every now and then we are on Old Man and the Three Things with JJ. So that appears on YouTube on his channel and also wherever podcasts are. But just keep an eye and support so that we can do more cool things, so that I can have more things to tell Dan to plug.
That's what I'm here for. It's really a long con plug delivery system. That's what I'm trying to do here on this show. And it will be my pleasure to do it, because I'm a member. I'm also a client. I'm a listener and I'm a appreciator of it. It's wonderful stuff that you and Nekias do. So heartily recommend it to folks. That's going to do it here for this episode of Divine Intervention. I want to thank Steve Jones Jr. for taking all this time to be with us and to reconnect with himself. I could see that he was feeling that vibe as we were going through today. Thank you to super producer John Gennaro for everything that he does to make this show look and sound great, and also for letting us know the Channing Frye shot and airball that time. wherever you are getting this podcast, do us a favor. Rate it, review it, leave a 5-star review for it. Let folks know that you dug it. It helps us with discoverability and with growing the show. I think that's about it. Thank you so much for listening. We'll see you again next week. Take care of yourself. You deserve it.